Thank you, Jeff. I noticed you did not become the new XFL coach in Houston. Wow, another swing and a miss by Jason Lockenfora. Who would have seen that coming? Let's go to Nate down in the borough. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. On the 10th of May, I tweeted out to the Preds Official Podcast, you know, how would Fisher or a former player of recency be a good option for changing stuff up on the power play. But with that being said, how different would it be in the locker room with him being a coach and not a player? Because I don't think, you know, he could come in and everybody would be like, oh, hey, Mike, what's up? Let's, you know, leave off right where we left off. It'd be a little different.
So where are you going with that? It would be, but what – are you saying that would be a detriment? That would be bad? I'm not sure your angle.
No, I'm asking, okay. Like, how? What would the impact be? Like, how different would it be?
Okay. All right, fair enough. Thank you, Nate.
I think you have to define what this, if you're going to go in this direction, and we don't know that they are, right? It's just we're speculating that we know
are
that
you
they're
saying
bringing
this list or the direction of adding another voice.
Adding another voice. Forget about these three names in this. I'm saying all we know right now is that everybody on the staff is coming
back.
Would
you be shocked if they did nothing in that department?
Not totally. Totally shocked. Now, would I recommend that? No, I think it is time to throw to maybe add to the mix and get a fresh set of ideas.
If they just said
because of what
nothing.
You've heard or because of
no.
just you think it's the wrong decision?
Well, because once again, I'll state back. How could you be last in something and say there's no
nothing.
Reason
yeah,
to do nothing?
No, I get it. So with that in mind, we agree on that. So are we defining this new role as solely a power play specialist, or are we just saying another coach that will add new ideas and play multiple roles?
St. Louis was power play specialist, offense overall, I think was the official title.
Offensive coordinator?
Well, I didn't say coordinator. He said offense overall. Like basically just come in there to add more scoring to the Blue Jackets. He was pretty good at that when he played.
Well, I from what I know about how a coaching staff fits together, I think it's fairly, I don't know about simple, but it makes sense. You could say, okay, you've got the power play. You're in charge of the power play. The offense in general, that's you can't really do that. It's not like football where I have the ball, my offense is on the field. You have the ball, my defense is on the field. Hockey is a flow, right? It's all within a system. So I don't know if you can just do that. You're in charge of offense. Now, are you saying your emphasis is going to be, we're going to develop these forwards? Like I think it's fair to say, every one of the defensemen on the Predators, in particular, Ryan Ellis, Matias Ekholm and Roman Josi, did they learn a lot and develop a lot as defensemen with Phil Housley there?
Yes.
No
answer.
Question.
Yes.
No question. Is there a guy out there that could do something similar to that?
You think Kimmo Timonen could do that?
Well, those guys are at a different stage of their career now. I mean, I don't know if I'm trying to develop Roman Josi anymore. He's pretty well developed.
Well, there's a young man by the name of Dante Fabro you could help along the way.
Agreed. I mean, he's pretty good. He is pretty good.
Or maybe find out what happened. I mean, we sat here and said, Matias Ekholm, I can't even believe we're questioning anything. He's such a solid rock foundation back there. And, you know, the guy we saw in the first round of the playoffs was like, who is this guy? We never even seen that out of him. Does that happen with a guy that could help out? I'm just saying a guy like Kimmo Timonen who played the position? I don't know. I don't think it could hurt in those particular situations where you have a bad game or two. You can pull that player aside and say, okay, this is going on. Hey, let's talk about this. I went through this once. You know, I remember a series. You know, that's why I think this is important to have a guy like that in there, especially not too far removed from the game. You can start talking about his experiences. Maybe he went through something like that. And players can relate to that. It's just my opinion. You may disagree.
I think the role, the important thing they have to define before they go and find the person is, what is the exact role? How are we going to split up the duties of this staff? Where is this guy? The power play isn't obvious, right? That's the number one thing that needs fixing on the team that could use a fresh set of eyes, even though they tried a lot of different things. They were consulting with some outside people. But what else is this person going to do? I don't think they need to bring in somebody who just only does the power play. There should be other things that that person could bring to the table in a perfect world.
Menu for pregame meal? I don't know. Maybe help out with that.
There's plenty to go around. And he's got to mesh with the current guys, right? True. He's got to earn the trust. He's got to be on the same page as the staff.
Yep.
Without crowding it and saying, all right, we got too many guys here. We got too many voices.
That'll do it for Wednesday's show. You have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then. Don't forget to stop by Bridgestone Arena on Saturday to celebrate the best fans in all of sports from noon until 4 p.m. We had this conversation with Sean Henry last week on the program. Enjoy a free lunch, team store sale, face painting, locker room tours, and much, much more. That all takes place Saturday at Bridgestone Arena from noon until 4 p.m. It is all free. F-R-E-E. Very, very cool. Back here on Darren and Dominic. I will not, as you just heard in my conversation with Tim Hasselbeck. We have quite the tilt.
Big matchup, yeah.
Quite the tilt at Lee Victory Park on Saturday afternoon. We say hello to Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Always enjoy our conversations with him. Scott, how you doing?
Doing well in lovely downtown St. Louis, getting ready for game three of the Western Conference Final. I can tell you, I think it's great that you continue to bang the hockey drum. I'm happy to come on anytime.
We have decided to do this. I think we've had you on since we put that out there every day, this time, 5 days a week on this show. Whether you want to or not, we are going to keep you in the loop of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I just think it's important for hockey to continue to grow in this market. I know it's natural for people to be mad or disappointed or sad or whatever your emotions are, and just to check out and say, we'll see you next year. And we're just trying to tell you, hey, hang in there. Come on, check it out. You don't have to sit there and consume 2-3 hours a night, but check in. And if not, we're going to check in for you every day at 1 o'clock. So thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to do it. It's exciting. The weird part now, I had this conversation this morning with my colleague Craig Custance at The Athletic, and it's like there's two worlds, right? There's the world that is in on the Final Four, and you know, there are lots of hockey fans who are following the Final Four and will follow the final when it's decided. But then there's lots of hockey fans who are still engaged, but they're more engaged with, okay, what's going to happen? Like in Buffalo, you know, they may not care about Game 3, but they sure care about Ralph Kruger being appointed the head coach there. And so, you know, it never ends. It's just a question of where your hockey focus is as you head into late May and June and towards free agency in July.
Yeah, I'd like for it to grow here because so many times, Scott, we've talked in this market. In baseball, you hear it doesn't do well on a national platform, but regionally – people are all in. The TV ratings are through the roof for their team. And are things great here? Do people love Predators hockey? Yes. They've sold out 153 consecutive games. But I also think sometimes it's good to get a different perspective from watching the rest of the league. If you're only focusing in on your team, sometimes, as they say, you can get a little too close to the forest and not understand that maybe feelings you have about a player or somebody else, if you watched other teams, you realize that goes on around the league. And so, yeah, I don't know if this is, you know, I've seen the ratings here and I'm starting to wonder, are we just kind of like baseball? Are we just a market that cares about our team and that's it?
Yeah. Well, and it's a fair question to ask. And I think, you know, to me, you know, one of the, you know, what, as you continue to follow the game, right, it's like a giant, it's a small town. It's just spread out over 31, soon to be 32 teams. And there are lines that are going to connect your team to other teams, and whether it's a team that you hate, maybe hate the St. Louis Blues, or, you know, connections with players who were once Preds or someone who may soon be a Pred or any of those things. I mean, that's when you hang around long enough and you're old like me, you can see how that sort of spiral work sort of unfolds. But, it, you know, it is it is connected, and I think that to me is part of the fun is looking at some of the connections and say, oh yeah, you know, like I did a piece on Pete DeBoer, the head coach of the San Jose Sharks, and I talked to Paul Maurice, and I didn't know this until I started looking into it, but former Red Wing goalie Greg Steffen had first coached with Paul Maurice and Pete DeBoer, and it's just kind of unfun to unravel that sort of stuff. So hopefully people will pay attention on some level.
I was reading your stuff on The Athletic, and you were breaking down each team in the Central, and of course I perked up when you started putting out what you thought about the Predators, maybe some moves, and the outlook, and you go through several layers, and one of them was unfortunately saying that you think the window may be closing on the Predators, and then you talk about some things that will happen and some people that you've talked to. I'll kind of let you set it up to the listeners out there, because it is a really interesting piece in what you said about the Predators.
Well, I just think the Predators are at a pivotal stage, and you know, you look around the NHL for, you know, sort of clues as to how teams are trending and what happens. And I think, you know, Washington's a really good example of, you know, you kick at the door, and then you make some changes, and they got to a point, you know, a year ago where they didn't extend Barry Trotz because they were at a point where they had to, I think ownership and management was like, well, if we can't get it done here, we're going to have to make some serious changes. And of course they did get it done, but it was a team that maybe wasn't expected to win when previous incarnations were. And, you know, for me, the Predators, to me, they were the most disappointing team, probably outside Tampa. I mean, Tampa, all right, I get it. They get swept after 62 wins. But I was disappointed in how the Predators played in the playoffs. I just didn't think they were very good. And to me, the disappointing part, and I'm sure that ownership and David Poile and Peter Laviolette feel, you know, the strength of this team is they've been built so beautifully on the back end, and they just didn't play well defensively, and there were, you know, horrendous mistakes. And now you look at that team, and they're all locked up on the back end, and you say, well, okay, and there are, I think, obvious changes about this team, right? I mean, you're not good enough down the middle to win, and it's now two playoff years in a row, and it's been disappointing for Kyle Turris, but it's disappointing. You lack the depth to be a Stanley Cup team at one of the most important positions in the league. And so now you have a contract that is very difficult now to both absorb, given Kyle Turris's production, and move if that's a direction you want to explore. So you're in a bit of a tough spot, and your defense is all locked up. So if you're going to free up room, and if you're looking at a guy like Matt Duchene, who is an unrestricted free agent and had, I thought, really good success, you know, not over the top, but good success in Columbus, but would be, I think, just a terrific fit in Nashville. You're going to have to do some things, and David Poile is a guy who does things. He's a GM that gets things done. But it's going to take some maneuvering, and I think you have to look at the makeup of the team and the leadership core. You have to look at all those things when you get bounced like you did in the first round, when this was a wide open year, and this is a team that's built to win the Stanley Cup. So I guess that's my point, that, you know, it's not, you know, the way I love David Poile building a team is that he gives himself all kinds of latitude. If I'm not mistaken, Pecorini is the only one with the no-move deal in the lineup. So he's got flexibility to move people around, and he's moved people in the past, and he's made hard decisions. It was hard to trade Seth Jones, but I still like Ryan Johansson as a center. I get that move every day. And if he ends up having to trade or wanting to trade PK Subban or Matthias Ekholm, you know, I mean, Subban's a guy that has value, right? He's a guy that teams would be very interested in on a whole bunch of levels, in terms of selling tickets, in terms of jazzing up their back end, in terms of producing offense from the back end. All those things are incredibly attractive to a lot of teams. Then I'm sure he's going to look at that. He has to. So I just think it's going to be a fascinating offseason, because this is a team that's built to win now. I don't know that they're necessarily built to win 2 or 3 years from now.
Speaking with Scott Burnside from The Athletic, 3 years ago after the round one sweep of the Blackhawks, we sat here and went, wow, the Predators basically skated circles around the Blackhawks. A team that's just won 3 cups in 6 years looked slow. Well, in your article, you said you talked to a longtime NHL executive. Their quote, the Predators, they look slow, weirdly slow. Did that surprise you?
No. Yeah, no, it really didn't. And it, again, it goes back to watching and, you know, really watching with great interest. And look, listen, you know, it's not about me, right? But I like the Predators to win the Cup. So, you know, you look a little bit more closely. You think, geez, was I that? You know, again, it's not about me, but I thought they were a better team than they showed in that first round. And you know, Dallas was good, but that was a series that was really, you know, that was there. And it was Dallas that did, you know, they were the ones who pushed the pace and made things difficult for the Predators, and they seem not to have an answer for it. And I think that has to be, you know, I wasn't all that surprised, but to me, I thought it was quite fair, actually.
I thought that was fair, for sure, that they did not look like they had the gear that we've come to expect from that team. But, Scott, I think the key for David Poile, and this is where I think he's pretty measured in how he goes, it's hard in the wake of losing. There's such a high level of disappointment when the expectations are so high, but do you judge on what happens in the six games, but you have to balance that with what they've done? For example, the only thing that really surprised me from your article is the scout, and I'm not sure who he is, obviously, but he says they need Shea Weber back. They've kind of fallen right off the face of the earth in terms of the identity. Well, since they traded Shea Weber, they have a Western Conference championship and then back-to-back Centrals with the President's Trophy in there. So it's not like they had the identity with Shea Weber and they lost it since the trade. So that would seem to me to be a little bit of an extreme take.
Right, and I think the idea, no one's expecting David Poile to go out and reacquire Shea Weber, right? But I think the point is that I think it's fair to ask, okay, what is the identity of this team right now? Because I think what we saw, you know, in going to the final years ago and through that President's Trophy winning regular season, that team didn't look at all like the team that took the ice in the playoffs this spring. And I think that's a question of, well, is it personnel? Is it identity? Is it, you know, what is it that you're missing? Because it's a team that should have been better, right? I think they're built very well, but now you have to ask, you know, do we stay the course? You know, which is, you know, Washington made fairly minor adjustments, right? They didn't, you know, and you know, you have to decide that. Can you just make a couple of, you know, tinker around the edges? You know, Michael Kempney was the guy that seemed to help push Washington over the hump last year. You know, who knew that Michael Kempney would be that guy? Is that the kind of thing we're talking about here? I think, again, going back to, you know, the flaw in where they're at right now has been that the player that they thought Kyle Turris was going to be as the number two center hasn't been that player. And I think when you look at the playoff losses to Winnipeg and to Dallas, they just haven't matched up very well down the middle. And so, you know, and so to get to respond to that, do you have something in house? Is there someone else who can do that job, or do you have to look outside? And to look outside means something that's a much more meaningful thing than we're talking about. And that's why, you know, that's it. I don't think he meant Shea Weber should come back, unless he can come back and play the second line center, which I don't think will happen. So.
Well, Shea Weber is a little bit older than he was three years ago.
But, yeah, and he doesn't help your speed. I guess when you look at what happened, you know, here's, I think what they're saying is in Montreal, there is no question about that team's identity. Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs and he's been hurt. But I'll tell you, I don't think there are many people in Montreal who would undo that trade. And, you know, I mean, and Nashville had great success. PK Subban's been an important part of that. I thought his play in the playoffs so was very disappointing.
Yeah, I'm the biggest Shea Weber fan there is, but that's completely out of left field there. They've had three of their best years ever in the context since that trade. So that's strange to me. But I think the key question, and you hit on it, is what to do about Kyle Turris, because I don't think it's realistic they're going to buy him out. That's too high of a price to pay. But as you say, it's not like you're just going to be able to wheel him out there if you wanted to make a move and expect to get much back. So the question has to be, what are the chances for a rebound? He is playing pretty well right now in the World Championships, for whatever that's worth, at least in the early part of the tournament. Let's see what it looks like by the end of the tournament. But I think you could at least make the case that the injuries derailed him, and he's a lot better than that. Maybe he's not championship level, but that you would certainly hope that he has a lot more production in him than what he showed this year.
Yeah, well, and sure, and it, and if that's the belief, right, and that's the thing. You, I mean, to me, that's the
question.
That's the hard decision. And if you believe that in your heart of hearts, if you believe that you roll the dice and you say, you know what, if he stays healthy, and we know what he did in Ottawa and how important he was there, and this isn't whether he's, it's not about, he's not a bad guy, right? But we're talking about he was acquired to be basically your number two center on a Stanley Cup caliber team, and the two playoffs, and yes, this regular season was a nightmare, and that happens to people, but certainly his two playoffs for the Nashville Predators have been wanting. And if you think that it's just a matter of time and you think that patience is the answer, and we have this conversation next year when the Preds are in the Western Conference Final, like, thank goodness he didn't make that switch because Kyle Turris has been tremendous, then that'll be good on David Poile. I would be shocked, frankly, if that's what happens. But, you know, that's, who knows? What do I know?
Yeah.
But I think what is obvious when you look, you know, this is, again, you have to say, how long do we wait? And that's the magical question for all the GMs. You know, Brian McClellan hung in, right? He hung in as the GM of the Washington Capitals, and he did some hard things. It was hard not to extend Barry Trotz because he knew it was going to hamper the relationship with the team, and ultimately it led to Barry Trotz leaving after they won a Stanley Cup. That's just, they had to make that decision. And, you know, David Poile has never been afraid to make the hard call and make the big move. And, you know, here's what I would say. When Kyle Turris returns for training camp, if that's how it works out, then that's what David Poile believes is best for the Nashville Predators, because that's all he cares about. So it's not about saving face for him. It's not about, you know, so if he comes back, then we'll see whether he's right or not. Two years in a row with a very, very good team, and you have one playoff win to show for it, after going to the final,
yeah.
I think the standards are pretty high in Nashville now, and they should be. And that's why I think it's important to ask hard questions, because that's what this team demands right now, and that's what this market demands.
No question about it. And the other thing that is intriguing is to get Matt Duchene, which would be something that I think a lot of people have been writing about, speculating that there might be some mutual interest there, then it just doesn't look like it would work salary cap-wise or even lineup-wise to have Duchene and Turris, fair to say? Which is ironic because they were involved in that same trade.
Yeah, no, it would be an interesting turn of events if somehow that was, you know, able to happen. And I'm not, you know, listen, Matt Duchene's going to be able to go wherever he wants to go. He's proven himself. I don't know whether, you know, I talked to somebody in Columbus, you know, you put a number on it, even though it doesn't mean anything, you know, call it 50-50 or whatever. But I think that's, and he's not the only option, right? I just think he would be a great fit. Like, to me, if you roll out Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, man, that looks pretty darn good. And if you do it with keeping Kyle Turris, and Kyle Turris is your number three guy, okay. Because, frankly, that's, you know, he would be okay as your number three guy, right? I mean, that's the reality of it. It's a question of how you make all these pieces fit.
Right, with the salary, because the salaries start adding up at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think it's natural to look at a guy like PK Subban, who maybe gives you some of that cap flexibility. You know, could you win a cup without PK Subban? I would argue you can, given how good that blue line is. Can you win a cup without a real bona fide number two center? And whether it's Kyle Turris, you know, the renaissance of Kyle Turris, or if it's Matt Duchene or someone else, I don't think you can. So that would, you know, that's my thinking on it.
Scott, appreciate the visit as always. We'll do it again here soon. Talk to you. Enjoy you're covering the Blues and the Sharks.
I am indeed.
Enjoy game three.
All right. Anytime, guys.
All right. That is Scott Burnside from The Athletic. We'll come back and hit on some things you just heard there next on Darren and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Last night, walking by Corner Pub downtown, which is a really cool place. If you haven't seen their setup, it's fantastic. They've got massive televisions. I walked by there last night on the way to the Ryman, Willie, which will be a subject of my You Just Made the List on Friday. And it's okay. Not the Ryman.
Okay.
They had the Bruins Hurricanes game on a bunch of the TVs. It was loud. You could hear it even walking on the streets. Got to be honest, looked in there, there were a lot of people, and I mean a lot, in there glued to that game. I was very encouraged by that. Now, some of them were wearing Bruins jerseys, so I don't know the significance of that. Are they out of a bunch of people from Boston in town? I don't know. Or is that where they go to hang out? I'm not sure. But I was like, all right. And they were glued. Yeah, I could tell. I mean, they were all in on that game. There were a bunch of them in there. So a lot of people watching the hockey game.
I was around Sunday afternoon. We were done with baseball. We just randomly went into a restaurant in our neighborhood that has a lot of TVs. And without me saying a word, right as soon as it was time for the coverage to start of the Bruins game, they flipped it over. You know, they put the biggest screen in the middle of the thing on the hockey game. So I don't know if somebody requested that or they just knew, but that's a great sign to me. Bruins are playing some great hockey, by the way.
Yeah,
man, big win last night. Missed opportunity for Hurricanes. This is what's so hard. Could the Hurricanes have played much better than they did in the first half of the game? They were dominating in a lot of ways, but they had nothing to show for it. Then all of a sudden, they don't score in the 5-on-3, and then the Bruins get a couple of goals from Chris Wagner. Who's Chris Wagner?
The Bruins are the best power play unit in the playoffs, period. They have the best power play unit in the playoffs. Look at the stats. Carolina has not been good. They're the second worst. Next to Nashville, went 0-for-15.
You know who's really been struggling? The Blues.
And Carolina's penalty kill has not been good at all.
Well, the two go hand in hand. They're going up against the Bruins. They're in the groove. But last night, it wasn't the power play. It was 5-on-5. But that's a great road win. You weather the storm, you get great goaltending, and then once you get the lead, you cling to it tight. And that's what they did. So tough. Bruins, tough to beat right now. There's not a lot. They're getting production from up and down the lineup. They're getting great defense up and down the defense core, and they're getting outstanding goaltending. By the way, here's a stat for you, Darren, by the Hockey News, and now I've lost it. But the last six Stanley Cup, this is from the Hockey News, the last six Stanley Cup winning goalies have all played less than 60 games in the regular season. And they use Rask as an example. They had Rask, but they also had Yaroslav Halak, who had a resurgent year as his backup. In fact, there were times during the season that Halak was playing better than Rask. There was a time of the year where the flaw in the Bruins appeared to be scoring. They weren't getting any depth past that top line, right? They had to break it up for a while. But then towards the end, it all kicked in. They started getting production. And that's been a big story for them in this playoffs, is the third and fourth line chipping in. Their fourth line is playing fantastic. Wagner, Sean Corrali. I mean, these aren't big names, but they're rising to the occasion. But I thought it was an interesting stack about a goaltending, right? It's now the trend. You got to have two. So that makes you feel pretty good about where the Predators sit as Pekka Rinne goes into this next contract. That's not going to be a problem, right? And it's not going to be – it's going to be normal, right? The days of the horse goalie that plays 65 to 70 games, that's just not – that's a thing of the past now. You can't do that anymore. It doesn't work. And Rask, the way he's playing, I think it gives you hope. Now, which guy will end up being your starter? That's the question down the road.
Well,
for
how many games did Martin Jones start this year?
I don't know.
But when you say it's a thing of the past, I mean it.
Well, when six straight champions have played, their starting goalie has played less than 60. I think that's a pretty clear signal.
I mean, the
best way to go.
The Blues, we know. I mean, they've this is what they've been doing for years, right? Pinging back and forth.
But you bring up Martin Jones. Martin Jones is still the weak link on the Sharks.
Right, but he's their number one goaltender.
He's their number one goalie, but he is not a strength of that team. He's the biggest weakness of that team.
Well, he hasn't been in the past, but he has been this year, for sure. I mean, he started 62 games this year.
Okay. But he's not the reason they're there. They haven't won it yet either.
I mean, as we've talked about, they've been the most consistent team. They're the number one team. They've made more playoff appearances in the last 15 years than anybody in the league.
Not because of him.
but he has been their workhorse for the last four seasons.
I'm just telling you that it wears on a goalie to play that many games. Now, he played 62. He didn't play 72, right?
Well,
have a good year.
The last 4 years, well, when was the last time they were in the Western Conference?
2016 is when they made the final.
Yeah, so twice, and now in the last 4 years, they've been in the Western Conference final. So he was their goalie. It's pretty good.
Now, 4 years ago, he had a really good year for sure.
He started 65 games that year.
Right, that's pretty standard for your number one.
In this article by Scott Burnside, who we had a good conversation with, he said that he talked to a longtime scout, executive, and player who has known David Poile for years and said there is a 0% chance that David Poile simply just sits back and hopes this turns around itself. I think that's...
Does that surprise anybody?
That's pretty obvious. That almost falls into the duh category because, as I've said on this show, me personally, you'll never hear me say that I faulted the move last year to listen to the players and stick with it. They asked to keep the roster intact. He did so. I thought it was the right move. It didn't work out. It's easy to second guess it now, since we all know. But, I mean, okay, you get 1 year to do that. I mean, that I have no problems with that. It didn't work out. But obviously, you're not going to go back and do it again. I mean, to me, that's kind of the duh. I mean, you can't and expect a different result, although he does reference the Capitals in there. And it is interesting because, you know,
they
the Capitals have
changes.
Had a lot of – well, yeah, and they were
out of necessity.
It looked like people were saying they're getting worse. Like their roster, yeah. They lessened their roster.
Well, if you look back to that time, that was there was the expansion draft, right? That was going on, so they had to maneuver for that and make their saves. They were up against the cap, and so they had to shed some payroll. So they didn't have a choice. They were going to lose some players because of it, and they did. So it was, and they let Barry Trotz's contract get into the last year without addressing it, right? And his neck was out on the line a couple of times during the course of the season. So it's odd how these things sometimes come together. Nothing in the article that Burnside wrote, even though it kind of had an edge to it, which is why it's getting the attention it did. But all of those issues are issues that have been widely discussed by shows like ours. The only thing that was completely out of left field was the stuff about Shea Weber. That made no sense to me. There's no merit to that at all. Now, overall identity, okay, we can talk about that. But bringing back Shea Weber, okay, the identity of the team since the Shea Weber trade has been pretty darn good.
One of the things that did stand out is, and we've talked about on the show, we've been telling you this for a good while, that when the news came out that all the coaches would be retained, didn't mean you can't add somebody. And he actually threw out some names. We'll discuss that on the other side. That's something that got my attention in this article. We'll do that next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. And they know a lot of you men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is front and center with all of that. He is the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne, who is the registered nurse. And they're very experienced staff. Want to give you men the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And as we all get older, I hope you want that like I do. Cool Springs MD, their services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area with improving your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. If you want to achieve that healthy lifestyle, what are you waiting for? Pick up the phone and make that appointment by dialing this number, like I've done, 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or you can always visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. So talking about the article Scott Burnside from The Athletic put in there, and he was breaking down the Central Division teams. Kind of just talking about, you know, what's recapping this season, what's the outlook, what do they need to do, who's free agents, all that good stuff. Now, one of the things that he brought up is that Peter Laviolette and his staff would be retained and they would be back. But he said, then there was, in the piece, he said, but it, you know, wouldn't be too crazy to think that they may add a different voice to the coaching staff, as we've told you for a good while now. He said, and they stated the example. He stated the example of what the one we've stated. Martin St. Louis in Columbus, who was brought in for the power play and overall their overall offense, and it helped. So a lot of people are using that as the example in the sport. And so then he says in his article, is there a role for Mike Fisher, Kimmo Tiiminen, Adam Oates, or other players who might help turn the ship around quickly? Now, that jumped out at me because that's kind of the first list I've seen of outside voices coming in and helping. Right? We've talked about it and adding another staff member, but we haven't thrown out any names. So what did you make of the list, the three names that Scott Burnside put in this article?
We probably should have asked Scott about this, but it appears to me to be completely speculative and not based on any knowledge of conversations he's had.
Well, he doesn't attach to it, I talked to so-and-so.
Yeah. I think if Mike Fisher gave an indication to the organization he wanted to be in some role, he could snap his fingers and that would be done. Now, Mike Fisher's never been a coach, so I don't know if he wants to walk in and say, and they hand him the power play. Mike, fix the power play. Now, you know, we know Mike Fisher. He'd give it a go and everything. Is that the right role for him? I don't know. He would be a tremendous addition to any team. Some teams have five assistant coaches. They got all kinds of people. At some point, you have to have a balance. So you could probably have too many people in there, right? Also, what is the connection? Now, Kimmo Tiiminen, he has a great connection to the Predators, and he also has a great connection to Peter Laviolette.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's where Scott Burnside got that. I can't imagine that there's actually been conversations about that. They did, great. I have the utmost respect for Kimmo. He would be awesome.
Well, I'm with you. I mean, the first two names made a ton of sense. Like, you get it, but where did Adam Oates?
But these are two guys
where did
that
come from?
These are two guys that have never coached, right? Kimmo and Mike
course.
Fisher.
They're former players.
Captains. Yeah, former captains of the Predators.
They've barely hung up their skates, so it's of course.
Adam Oates is a former head coach. He is a skills specialist, and so he would be in the
not
mold.
A skillsy, just a skills.
Not skillsy. I don't think he has any connection to Peter Laviolette. Or anybody on the coaching staff. So that would be the not fit. I think where the thought process is on him is he's a guy that has sort of been a consultant, been a guy that has helped power plays. He himself was one of the best power play guys, best playmakers, period, of his era. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame kind of guy. I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame or not, but he's racked up a bunch of points. Is that... I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
The
what
one thing
David
I know
Boyle
about these
about
three,
that.
They're well respected.
Oh yeah, Adam Oates was replaced by Barry Trotz as the head coach of the Capitals. Adam Oates did not have a lot of success as a head coach, but there are a lot of people that think very highly of his ability to develop skills. But these are just three names, right? There's an ocean of people out there.
Now wait a minute, but here's where I'm going with this, because I will say my personal opinion. I do think if this is the route they're going, and I think there's a reason why we've been bringing this up, it probably is. Because I think everybody was pretty surprised that everybody's remaining intact. That's just not how it works in sports.
Right.
If you finish dead last in a category, usually somebody has to pay the price. That's how it works in sports. So I think most were pretty surprised that everybody's being retained. But I do think they need a player guy. A guy that they can relate to. A guy
that's heard that argument made, and I agree with that.
I think they need, because
a younger former player.
Well,
because Peter Laviolette is a former player, Kevin McCarthy is, but they're somebody who's a little bit closer to age than the current players. Is that where you're going?
Well, yes, yes. But I don't want this to – I don't want to – I'm not showing any disrespect. But also a guy that – look, when you're really, really good at your craft and these players know it, they tend to listen. Fair or unfair, they tend to listen to you a little bit more because not only do they know you went through the grind that they've gone through and you've been there, done it, if your career resume is really good, like you've either won cups or you've got all these long playoff runs – or you're a borderline Hall of Famer, or you're a Hall of Fame player, the point is, sometimes, fair or unfair, they tend to listen to you more. They feel like they can relate to you more. You get much more of the respect card because of your name. I think Phil Housley had that with the players. He's a Hall of Fame player, and I think he got that out of them. I think they naturally respected him. They're like, this guy played in the league forever as a defenseman, and oh, by the way, he's in Toronto. And oh, by the way, he went in when he was a coach with them.
Right.
You're talking about getting respect immediately. It's like, yeah, guys, I'm going to be stepping away for a couple days. I've got to go to Toronto and be put into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
But also, we both know that history is full of great former players who did not make good coaches.
No question.
But I agree with you that
it's got to be the right fit. I'm not just saying get a name. But these guys are well, right? These names get your attention. That's what I'm getting at. They get your attention.
They command respect, and they would get your attention. Even though Mike Fisher and Kimmo Tiimonen have no experience as coaches, Adam Oates does. But I have heard, and I do think there's something to this, a missing element of just the experience group is somebody who's a little less removed from the playing days, who might be closer in age, maybe has a little easier time communicating.
It's both for me.
And being able to be a positive chain of communication from the players in the locker room to the head coach in Peter Laviolette. I've heard that theory thrown out there. I mean, it makes sense. And so we'll see where they go. I do think a new ingredient could be a fresh set of ideas could be a really good thing for this group. I do not agree with the statement in this article. In five seasons with the Predators, Laviolette's success graph appears to be in descent. I don't know. I still think the window's open, right, with some tweaks. I think it's clear that they need a few changes, but I don't think we need to get drastic. We're not talking about a huge overhaul, but they do need to make some changes, right? They need something a little fresh. The right tweaks could keep the window open for a good while, I think. There's plenty of talent.
Of course.
Plenty of talent on the roster.
Once again, going back to if you've won the President's Trophy and you're out in the second round, and then the following year you're out in the first round, I mean, it's
– okay.
Yeah, you need to make some changes.
Is Tampa Bay on a descent because they lost in the first round?
I think down in Tampa, I'd love to know what they're talking about right now, because right now they have underachieved in the playoffs, and they've been a really, really good regular season team.
They went to the West – they went to the Eastern Final and lost in seven. And then they lost in the first round after a President's
Trophy. What do you think they're discussing up in Toronto? What do you think they're discussing up there right now?
Salary cap issues. They got some major.
But they keep getting to playoffs and they keep being one and done.
Anything? But that's totally different than where the Predators and the Lightning are. I think the Capitals are a good thing to keep your eye on, but I think the thing that I've been continuing to harp on, and I think I'll continue to do it, is you can't overreact to a bad playoff series. You can't do nothing, but you can't overreact to that. You can't go crazy and start messing with too much stuff, because then all of a sudden you could be worse off than you were before.
Well, I don't think anybody's saying that. I just think that everybody's probably on the same page. You can't do what you did last offseason, which I thought was fine. But you can't just say, okay, we're just going to hope everything comes around. Everything that we've discussed, it just all comes around. It'll be the second year, not the first year.
And cap issues force you to do it to some degree.
Sometimes, yeah. We'll come back. Hey, Jerry and Nate, we'll get to you before we get out of here. Hang with us. We'll wrap up Wednesday's show next.